I feel like I have stripped all of my clothes off, including my knickers, and I've run down the high street and everybody's looking at me.
My name is Paul Harvey and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips, how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. My guest on today's program is Gemma Ray, and she's a lifelong performer and creative writer. She's been writing since she was 7 years old. Her career path was from the civil service to radio, starting as the traffic tart. Yes, traffic tart was on her job title on the contract. Her current business role is a communications coach, and she supports clients to communicate at all levels through any medium. She draws on her past experience as the radio presenter, vocalist, actress, public speaker, and event hosting, and she transfers those skills to clients through the coach media of coaching. So Gemma works with a number of business owners, influencers, and career climbers to increase confidence and improve their storytelling. But as ever, we're here to talk about the person and not the career. And Gemma has just become a published author, and that is a story worth sharing. Gemma had a successful life, as far as anyone could see from the outside, but it was not working on the inside. And that road to self-discovery and reconciliation with herself also led to a breakdown. It was the process of recovery from that breakdown where the idea or the possibility of writing a book was born. Now that book sat in her mind for quite a while before actually hitting the page, and it would not have seen the light of day without a friend pushing her to get the job done. Do it now. And within the space of just 1 hour, it was mapped out and the first chapter was written. The book is called Self-Discipline. It is a how-to guide to stop procrastination and achieve your goals in 10 steps. Now listeners, there is a Kindle offer on this book operating now until the 13th of December. So if you want to get a copy of this book at a really amazing price, get to Amazon now. The book is called Self-Discipline by Gemma Ray. This interview is the real story behind the book, what it feels like to publish and promote your work. Apparently running naked with no knickers and unshaven legs. It addresses the big issues around getting stuff done. We touch on some of the tools and tricks in the podcast. We also talk about mental health and the wellness spiral and all of my usual questions of life, passion, success and purpose. Gemma is a natural speaker and this is a fun, livelier journey about real life while living in a caravan. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Gemma Ray. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. And today I am delighted to have with me Gemma Ray on the line. And like a lot of my connections, of course, I ferret them out from online. And Gemma had written a new book and I was intrigued by the book. And so we reached out. And of course, it's perfect timing for her and perfect timing for us as well. So Gemma, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Hello. So, okay. How did you get here? This is the stock thing. I always ask people, what's the journey been? Because obviously you're now a published author.
I know. Scary.
I'm sure there's been a journey towards that place. How did
you get here? Oh, well, do you know, I've always loved writing from a very, very young age. It's definitely been one of the things that has kept me going. I've kept a diary since I was about 7, on and off. Wow. Journaling has been a huge part of my life for both work and business. But I actually, expression, I think, is definitely one of my values. I just have to be able to express, whether that's on stage, because I do a bit of theatre, singing, writing, performing. And I started my career as a radio presenter. I won my job as a traffic tart. That was my actual job title on my contract. Traffic tart. Couldn't get away with that now, could you? Me too and all that. So I won my job as a traffic tart. and began presenting the traffic news on my local radio station, Rock FM in Preston. And it was funny, actually. It was my best lesson in perception. I knew I had an audition for this job, so I had to compete with other listeners to get this job. And when I found out, it was like a pre-record. I didn't realise. I got the phone call when I was at work. And at the time, I was working as a civil servant, and I hated that job. So I got the phone call from the radio station on the Thursday afternoon. I was expecting to find out on the Friday. And of course, they did this pre-record. And going screaming mad in the office, oh my God, I've got my job on the radio. So the first thing I did was walked into my boss's office and told him to shove his boring job up his arse. And I was going to start on the radio the next week. What I didn't realise was that I was walking away at 19 from a 20 grand a year job as a civil servant, and I started on 9 grand a year on the radio. And that was the best lesson in perception that I've ever had, because it made me realise that things aren't always as they seem. And so my career has taken me through radio, copywriting, sales, but also into PR and marketing as well. And my company, I have a company called Bragging Rights, because it is all about sometimes the bragging rights that you can get from whatever you've put out there in life, you know. And so, yeah, that's kind of been my journey, is moving into, I've always sold something now, whether that's a song on the radio, a local client, a concept, now it's a book. It's always kind of got its heart in sales, I suppose.
Mm. So the passion is the communication, the writing?
What definitely, is the passion? Yeah. The passion is definitely communication. So I kind of badge myself, because it's really difficult to explain what I do, you know, and all the gurus would tell you to stick to one thing for marketing purposes. So stick to one thing, but it is quite difficult to blend everything that I do. So I call myself a communications coach. Mm. And I help businesses to communicate, sometimes internally with their own staff, sometimes with themselves, but a lot of the time it's out to their relevant audience in a medium that's right for them and their business.
It sounds we do a similar job with different titles.
Yes. Yeah, possibly. My family basically call me a gobshite. I'm Chandler, because, you know, like Chandler on Friends, nobody knows what he does. My whole family call me Chandler.
Okay.
So, yeah. It's funny, you know, like one day I can be helping a client get TV coverage. I can be writing a eulogy for somebody's loved one's funeral, and I can be shooting a video for social media or something. So it's very, very varied, very different, but fundamentally it all comes down to being able to express the right message to the right people.
And you're very passionate about that. I can see that.
Well, I love it. Yeah.
I had the advantage of being able to see you, but obviously you might come. But I can see how much you were shining when you were saying this.
I'll tell you what I am struggling with, making myself shine, because that's very alien to me. So writing my own book and putting myself out there, I mean, I only launched it less than a week ago, and I found it incredibly tough. I'm so used to promoting everybody else and shouting about their amazing things and amazing achievements that they've done, or a product or a concept or a service, but actually having to do it about myself, I feel like I have stripped all of my clothes off, including my knickers, and I've run down the high street and everybody's looking at me.
That is quite a vision.
Yeah. And I've not shaved my legs. That's what it feels like. Yeah, it's extremely exposed and vulnerable. That's the best way I can describe it.
The difference is, when you are promoting someone else, you can always, you're promoting, say, look at him, look at him, look at her.
They're
brilliant. Look at them. But now you're doing exactly what your parents told you not to. Look at me. Look at me.
Exactly. You're being a show off. Stop showing off. Those horrible three words that you get told as a child that I try not tell my own son. It's a totally alien concept. And I'm not doing it that well, if I'm honest, this week.
Well, you are, because we connected at the right time for you.
Yes, definitely the right time.
A conversation about this. So you have launched the book. So I guess let's talk about this book at this point, because it's interesting. And I have looked at, I've got the copy. I've got my copy, and I haven't done my review for you yet, and I will.
Oh, thank you.
a bit biased, probably. But, it's really useful. The book is called... You're not going to say, are you?
Self-discipline. It's very long. Self-discipline, a how-to guide to stop procrastination and achieve your goals in 10 steps.
See, I knew you'd have it much better, say it much better than I did.
That's only because it's on the screen in front of me. Full disclosure. I always get some of the words mixed up. No, self-discipline, a how-to guide to stop procrastination and achieve your goals in 10 steps.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I must admit, the one that's flawed me at the moment is coming up with 100 goals.
Yes. It's hard, isn't it?
That has totally flawed me because some of them are definitely aspirational. Never going to be a goal I would go for.
But I think if you're somebody who's like yourself, you're an entrepreneur, you're in this space where you kind of answer to yourself, you do tend to go through life with lots of ideas. And especially in the online world that we live in now, you know, you and me, we're in similar groups on there, out there on Facebook, for example, LinkedIn. And you see what other people are achieving. And sometimes you just want a piece of the pie in the action. And doing that exercise, the exercise is to pretty much try and nail down 100 things that you want to achieve. And the exercise is to then audit that list and go back and figure out which ones are actually true to you and right for you. Because I'll give you an example. I used to follow some gurus who always talked about flying business class. Let's go to America and fly business class. And I remember a couple of years ago making a vision board and putting that as one of my goals. I want to fly business class. And it was only actually when doing this exercise of the 100 goals came up a couple of years later and I started doing all of mine, and I did put that down, and I looked at it and stared at it and thought, do I though? Do I really? Am I actually that bothered? You know, do I really want to be spending 4 times the price of a ticket to just sit in a better seat with a pop-up screen, have some fluffy socks, and maybe get a glass of champagne? No, that's actually something that I've seen other people talk about was an achievement for them, but it's not right for me. And especially now I'm renovating my house, do I want to fly business class or do I want nicer tiles in my kitchen? And the answer is always going to be the tiles. So, yes. And I think sometimes it's really easy to get sucked into this online world, this rose-tinted world that we live in digitally, and be able to really take yourself offline, do a digital detox, write down everything that you want to achieve, and figure out which out of those lists, which out of that 100, the top three are the most important to you and what will make a massive difference, not to necessarily your finances, but how happy you are, how you feel in your life, what you've achieved. That's why it's one of those exercises I love.
I think it's a great exercise. And I wonder if part of the problem in life or the problem out there in the world, this idea that's, you know, that you've written the book for, is part of how far we've traveled in terms of life has become so complicated. As you said, you had a desire to travel to America because it was someone else's desire. We are so fed these things from what we see around us. That is success. That is success. That is success. That's success. Well, what's success for me? And I don't think many people know.
I don't think many people know either. I think I'm still struggling to know.
Well, let's have that conversation. So, you know, we were all sold this idea of success. I mean, I grew up, all right, I'm 55, and I grew up with the concept of study hard, work hard at school, get exams, you know, get a good job. And my mother said, get a job. Doesn't matter what job, get a job and stick with it. That was my mother's career advice, which I unfortunately did take. You know, so you did that sort of thing, and you would meet someone, you'd buy your house, you'd have the car, and all the way, and you'd have the family, and that was it. And then at some point, you can retire and have and enjoy your life.
It's kind of like in the reverse, it has completely gone. And I think I talk about this in the book. There's a brilliant guy called Sean Acor who wrote an amazing book called The Happiness Advantage, right? And he's got a great TED talk on it as well. So search for Sean, S-H-A-W-N, Acor, A-C-O-R, on TEDx or TED Talks. It's 12 minutes long. But he talks about success, and we're never going to achieve success as human beings because once we get there, we move the goalposts. So I use in my book an example because I've come from that sales background. So in the past, when I worked in radio sales, let's say, for example, in March, our target was to earn 20 grand that month for our department. If we hit 20 grand, we got a bonus. Brilliant. But do you know what? In April, they'd put our target up to 22 grand. So you could never ride on the coattails of achieving your target for long because the target would just get changed. It would just get moved. And the job does become harder and harder and harder. And I think a lot of us are guilty of doing that. You know, myself at the moment, we are renovating a house, and my husband, God love him, is just waiting to move in. And it feels a little bit like, I'll be happy when we've moved in the house. I'll be less stressed when we're in the house. Where the trick and the hardest thing for any of us to do, especially in this fast-paced world where we get instant gratification at the moment, is to be happy with what we've got right now. We've only ever got the present moment. And to be able to be grateful and happy for what we've got right now, I think, is the biggest trick for any single person.
Yeah. I'm in the same question. I mean, this is my podcast talking to you, but I spend a lot of time burying my soul in this podcast a lot of the time. I mean, one of the issues for me is I struggle to find out what joy is, what actually makes me happy. It's like I'm generally happy doing whatever I'm doing. But whereas once upon a time there was the hedonistic, yeah, go to party. The whole idea of going to a party, man, you go, oh, God, do I have to?
Yeah, exactly. I would so much rather be at home in my pajamas and not have to colour my eyebrows in,
so,
you know.
Where is it? What, like, I think there was in a group that we're both in, you know, there is a plan to do a 90-day project, which we're all doing. And
yes.
One of the things in that group was the question is, what is it? What do you do for fun and joy? And it's like, I had to kind of go, bloody hell, I've not a clue. I mean, running is the big thing for me at the moment. So I do a lot of time running. So I recognize it's different as I've changed, but I do wonder, I find a lot of people spend their life getting out of their life, as in drinking to get out of their life.
Yeah.
Or watching a film or binging on Netflix, where they're now out of their life. They're in someone else's.
I lived like this, actually. This was kind of my journey towards writing this book.
Yeah.
I've stopped drinking, actually. So I actually stopped drinking in April. I had a blip in August where something went wrong, and two bottles of wine later and one mega four-day hangover. Haven't touched a drop since. So, you know, we're now in December, so I've done pretty much 8 months with one blip without alcohol. And it was very kind of a conscious decision to do that because I wanted to feel everything, good and bad. Mm-hmm. I wanted to stop medicating with alcohol. Mm. And that's been part of my journey. It was 3 years ago when life just felt a little bit fake. And I came across a book called The Miracle Morning. I know you're into your morning routines as well. And all of a sudden I started getting up early and implementing a morning routine, and it made such a difference to my life. But you talk about, I think it's you, isn't it, you do the morning pages.
I do morning pages, yes.
Yeah, well, I started
day 57. Yeah.
Well done, because that's hardcore being able to do. Yeah, well done. You should be very proud. But I think for me, I'd had a diary as a child, and I started journaling. This was 3 years ago, and started to really examine my life. And I was at the time so busy. I was out every night doing something. I was hammering it at the gym. I was on my phone as soon as I came home. I wasn't connecting with my husband. I wasn't connecting with my child. And life felt plastic and superficial. And I was constantly on social media, looking what everybody else was doing. So this morning routine and this journaling allowed me to fully shine a light on myself and figure out what was it that I actually wanted and what was it that I actually needed out of life.
Yeah.
And I got to a point about 2.5 years ago where I realized that I outwardly projected this attitude of being grateful and happy for everything. And I was always the peacekeeper. I always saw people from their perspective. You know, they used to call me Kofi Annan in the radio because I'd be like the peacekeeper between the commercial department and the on-air team. And I always saw both sides to every story. But my own story was kind of like stabbing me in the face, and it took me a long time to realize. And my biological father, a guy called Tony, I don't call him dad because I was very, very lucky that when I was 5, 6, I got my dad, who my mum married when I was 6. But my biological father, Tony, I realized that I'd hated him with every fiber of my being for 30 years, to the point where even the mere mention of his name would make me feel sick. I would have like a physical and an emotional reaction to even thinking about him, shaking. And my child had turned 5 in this particular year. And I think watching my little boy in his first school play, you know, his first day of school, the first school shoes we went to buy, the first time he brings a reading book home, it ate away at me that year, because it was like, how could he Tony, walk out of my life at this point because it is just so joyful. You talk about joy. Joy for me is my kid, you know, looking at my kid and watching him, and it just ate away at me. So one of my clients at the time is a born again Christian, and she said, you know, big J dog, big Jesus up there. He talks about love and forgiveness. Have you ever tried that? And it was like a lightning bolt, you know, like they say, just hit my head. It's like, oh my God, yes, of course. I've spent 30 years hating him. That's why life feels off and awful, because I'm outwardly projecting this amazing, happy personality. But inside, I am just full. It felt like I was black inside. Mm-hmm. So I found Tony on Facebook, and I literally sent him a message to say, hi, Tony, can I come and see you sometime? And I worked through with the help of some amazing people. Shari Teagman is one of them. I'd love to mention, you know, you know Shari too. I know she's been on your podcast. Yeah. She's amazing. And, you know, Shari was one of those people that kind of helped me process those emotions. Mm-hmm. And I decided, I made the huge decision of contacting him to tell him I had forgiven him, and worked through a lot of my issues. And I didn't get that opportunity because he died a week later. Yeah. So that it was a soul destroying time. That's the best way I can describe it. And I was really lucky that I'd spent the week before trying to see things from his perspective, and seeing the gifts that him not being in my life had allowed me to have a proper family unit with my mum, my dad, who's technically, you know, my stepdad, my sisters. It had allowed us to have a proper family unit, and it allowed me to be grateful and show what I didn't want from life. Mm. And at his funeral, I publicly declared my forgiveness of him at his funeral. I stood by his graveside as they put his coffin in, and I'd written a letter to him, but to myself as well, to forgive myself for things that I wasn't proud of. And I just basically said, you know, for everything you chose to miss, we choose to rewrite our history with love and forgiveness. Mm. And we are so grateful for everything that, you know, without you, we wouldn't be here. Rest in peace. And threw it in. And it was honestly, it was the most pivotal moment of my life. And I feel very lucky that I got that closure. Mm. 30 years of pain was gone. And unfortunately, a week later, I did have a nervous breakdown. And it's like I shattered into a million pieces, but in order to put those pieces back, I had to examine every single one of them closely and go, is this actually me? Am I going to put this back?
Hopefully the breakdown was, what caused the breakdown? Was it the process you were going through? Or
yeah, it was all very, very quick. So I'd started coaching. It literally all happened within a 4-week period. So to have that, it was the first kind of foray into coaching that I'd ever done. And people listening to this,
hello.
Sorry, I knew that would happen. Phone call. So yeah, it was the first kind of foray into coaching that I'd ever done.
Yeah.
So it was the first time I'd ever had to examine myself and think about why I did the things that I did. And for anybody listening, and yourself, you've probably been through this. It's really difficult at the start. It brings up a lot of things about yourself or your past that you didn't realize has affected you right into your adulthood. So it was very kind of fast-tracked. I made that realization that life wasn't right. I got some help with coaching. I started down the route of learning of what was happening. I decided to forgive my dad. I contacted him, and then he died. And it was the breakdown was a lot of regret, you know?
It's like, dealing with those demons that we hold in some ways. And And I know exactly where you've come from and been there. Never went to the breakdown front, but I know what you mean.
I think like mental health has definitely moved on, even in the last 2 years. Mm. And at the time, it was not something I ever even thought to go and see my doctor, get some medical help. I think there was still a bit of a shame and a stigma attached to that, even 2 years ago. Whereas to see people open up about the mental health now is absolutely incredible. And I was lucky that the thing that brought me back to me, the thing that helped me heal, was the morning routines. It was the stuff that you know, that's why I wrote the book. It was the stuff that I've wrote about in the book that helped me get back on track, figure out who the hell I was, so I was able to then live the rest of my life. And writing a book about self-discipline when you are a person who feels like you're not very good at self-discipline is a bit of a contradiction. But I wanted to write something that wasn't in your face. It wasn't a look at me and what I've done and you can do this too. It's very honest. It's very, listen, I have not got all my stuff together, but when I practice just a few of these little things, life is a lot easier and a lot happier. And I wanted to share that journey with other people because it saved me. It really did.
Mm. There's something which has occurred, and I've heard it in several places, and it's I've done my own thoughts on it recently. And I mean, in the podcast, I'm creating a few resources for people just to go and look at, like the ones about morning routines, and there'll be others as we go, just to search some resources. But one of the things that occurred to me recently is the spiral. And I think we live as humans on the spiral. And I don't think anyone realizes, and there's no set point on the spiral. So when we're on the up, we're going up on the spiral, and our sense and our well-being keeps going up. And then as soon as we kind of struggle, we start to slide back down again.
Yes.
And the point is, unless we find some way to put the brakes on, we will hit the bottom. Yeah. And most people just go up and down on the spiral. So you have good days when you're going up and bad days when you're going down. And I think as entrepreneurs, people that don't have the safety net of the company or someone else, you know, around us,
yes,
I think we're very susceptible to the winds and wanes of the spiral. I particularly can see myself going down, and some days it's like I've got to stop this.
even just that visual is really helpful. You know, I can see at any point now you've said that, I think that's really powerful because I can see the future. I would be able to say to myself, whereabouts am I on the spiral right now? And I think it would be a good, like you say, to figure out the set point to know,
a spiral is a slope.
Yeah.
So if you stop going up, you're going to slide back down again. There's nothing going to stop you.
No, it's like I've got both feet on the sides, you know, like you're doing a helter-skelter as a child. I'm getting a burn mark on my arse. Sliding down. That's where I feel at the moment. I feel like I'm about 75% at the top with all limbs out, trying to stop myself from going down any further. I'll tell you, because I think I don't want to use the word unfortunately because it's not right. Very amazingly and gratefully, I was in a position where I had to get a full-time job only 2 months ago because, as I've mentioned, we're renovating our house. And unfortunately, the way the banks and mortgages work, if you're self-employed, oh my goodness, you are obviously irresponsible and cannot be trusted to pay back your mortgage, which is really frustrating. So I was very lucky that I had 48 hours to find full-time employment. And one of my clients graciously said, yes, we would love to have you more. So I have been doing that for the last couple of months. In addition to my book work, my writing, I've still carried on writing award entries for clients. But that's been interesting. Talking of the spiral, when I first started that job, I hit rock bottom down that spiral. I felt like I'd spent 2 years, especially after a nervous breakdown, building up my own freelance business. I'd finally got to the point where everything felt great. And then I was knocked and hit with the news that, no, in order for you to be able to sort, you know, get your house finished, you're going to have to get a job. Yeah. So that felt devastating.
Yeah.
But then I realized that what was happening was, and I can use your spiral analogy, I'd go to work and I'd be at the top of the spiral. It was brilliant. And then I'd come home and I'd be at the bottom. And do you know what it was? I actually really loved the job and I hated admitting it. Because we're in this entrepreneur online space where the language is so powerful. The language involved in being an entrepreneur is you escape the 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You know, that language is so, it's like you're in a prison if you're in corporate. I've turned my back on corporate, left a world of 9 to 5 hell. And all of a sudden, I found myself back in 9 to 5 hell world and thought, oh, I'm really loving this, but I shouldn't be loving it because everybody that I admire and look up to says that I shouldn't. And so that's been a real difficult challenge. I've definitely been up and down that spiral the last couple of months. But I've been very lucky that I've been able to do my books and everything on the side as well, but still have that regular money coming in on the 26th. That's weird.
Yeah,
not used to that.
Yeah. That is weird.
Haven't chased any money for a couple of months. It's a bit weird.
Yeah. So I answer the question. What is success to you? I think I know the answer, but what would you define as success now?
Do you know, there is a phrase that I remember. I was asked this question as a teenager when I didn't really understand the world, and it's not changed. I always said that my goal in life was to be healthy, happy, and financially secure.
Yeah.
And I remember saying that as a teenager, and it sounded really boring. But, you know, life as an adult is really boring. Self-discipline, oh my God, it's the most boring thing in the world, but it allows for freedom. Yeah. And, you know, being able to see what I actually want, you know, you follow all these online gurus, six-figure business, seven-figure business. I've realized that I don't need that to live a great and happy life. As long as I'm healthy, happy, and financially secure, as long as I'm going to pay off my mortgage by the time I retire and still have a bit left in the pot to have fun, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And success is living in the moment and appreciating what you've got at this present time, because it's all we've got.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, a lot of people live either in the future or in the past. And they forget. They forget the present. My father, bless him, died a couple of years ago now. And he, when my mum died, he lived entirely in the past. So, the house never changed. The house literally stayed as a mausoleum to my mum. Nothing changed in the house. And that was his choice. Now, we did try, but that was his choice.
Yeah, and that's what life is. Life is a series of choices. Mm. And the biggest lesson I think I've had over the last couple of years is learning to accept responsibility, learning to not blame other people or other circumstances, and know that everything is in your power. Yeah. Everything is just a choice. Yeah. And I think when I got to that point, it was quite liberating to know that everything was my fault. whether it was good or bad, everything was my fault. And there was
here's the thing, there is no good or bad.
No. And that's only you can choose how you feel.
Hard thing for people to realize. There ain't no good or bad. I know life can deal some really shit things at times.
Yeah.
Whether that be illness and all sorts of bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But it's not good or bad. It just is. It's how you
how you
hold that thing.
And
I was talking to someone this morning. She said to me, she's just signed up on a course, someone's marketing course. I said, what made you sign up on the course? She said, because her and I are in contact. She said, I was so inspired by the leader, because she has a speech impediment and she has arthritic hands, and she still managed to create this thing, and it's brilliant. And then it's like, now, you know, this woman who obviously has struggled with Louisa and has still managed to create that people find useful.
Overcoming adversity, it's massively inspirational.
I don't want any adversity, thank you, universe, to overcome. No. I'm very happy the way I am, thank you very much. But I do appreciate the fact that people do.
Yeah, I think I've done my bit. And people say to me, you know, when I say, I'll mention it in passing, I kind of had a nervous breakdown, and they look at you like, oh, but honestly, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. It really is. I'm at the time, it was hell, absolute hell, don't get me wrong, but being able to look back on it and realise just how pivotal and important it was in my life to then be able to go on and live my life, definitely. Wouldn't recommend it to people.
And you need to take care of yourself, because you've been there once, and so there's always, you need to make sure that you look after yourself in terms of the signs and recognise the signs. And I have some people that have done this journey a few times because they don't recognize the signs. They do the same thing, end up in the same place. So it's important to, as you say, mental health is something we need to take.
Yeah, definitely. And I am extremely lucky. My husband, who has never been coached ever, is the most amazing coach that anybody could wish for.
Fantastic.
And he, you know, When my biological father passed away, my husband was my rock. I just, you know, I broke into a million pieces, and it was him who helped me put things back together. And we just have a really good time. We communicate very well. We argue a hell of a lot. We fall out, especially about the washing up. But he is able to see the signs in me and me him, and know when I'm falling down that spiral, and get me to open up and get me to figure out what it is that's going on. And I am extremely lucky that I have that. I have that in my life. But I think because he watched me fall apart and helped put me back together, yeah, it made him the best coach that I've ever had.
That's wonderful.
He really did. Yeah. So very grateful to him. And bless him, he's, you know, he's building our new home. And
is he physically building it himself?
Oh, he's done a heck of a lot. He's done all the electrics inside and he's managed the whole project. And yeah, there have been times
working,
working full time and living in a caravan and having to deal with me and our crazy dogs. So yeah, but he manages to keep everything together, and I look at him in absolute awe because he's not in the same kind of spaces that you and I are. He's not seeing other people and learning constantly, being inspired from other people. He's going off his gut feeling, and yeah, he's carved his own path through life, and it is incredibly inspirational to be a part of. I'm very, very lucky. He's my best cheerleader. And he's really fit, and he doesn't realise.
Now I'm going to look at some pictures of him now, aren't I?
I am well punching.
I'll find some photographs of him now. I'm going to look at the paper thing after this. So tell me, I always get to this point in the conversation when I'm talking to a guest, and it's a strange question. It's like, is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't?
Oh.
And the reason I ask this question, and I say this every time, is because I don't want you to put the phone down on me and go, I wish I'd said so-and-so. What would you say, given ultimately to say anything you wanted to?
Putting my sales hat on now. Maybe you should have asked me how I get a copy of my book.
Well, that will come. I'm sure there will be a promotional slot for you.
Do you know what? Even just saying that makes me feel...
Yeah, I can see you have cringe. Visually, you've changed.
But if I was talking about a client's book, I'd have no problem whatsoever at all. Yeah, oh, that's horrible. No, I don't think so. I think we've had a really good one, really good chat, and I very much appreciate it.
Okay, so all right, let's talk about the book then. I know we've talked a lot about the book, but there's always more to say about it. So stop cringing. So when you wrote this book, who did you write it for?
Me, to see if I could.
So who is the ideal person for the book? I mean, that's the point. When they say write a book, they say write.
They always say you should write the book that you need to read yourself. This is why I did it.
Okay.
The irony. So I have a partner on this. He's a friend of mine called Ben, and he lives out in Thailand, lives his laptop life in Thailand, lucky boy. And he challenged me to write this book. But the irony is I had no self-discipline to write it first. So it stayed an idea in my head for 3 months. And we had a Zoom call planned in for an hour.
Yeah.
And the first 10 minutes we're chatting away. And he's like, have you even outlined the chapters or anything, or any ideas? I was like, no. So we'll tell you what, for the rest of this call, stay on the line, but make a start. So I took a piece of paper and did like a mind map of everything that I knew on this topic. And he said to me, just use everything you've been doing anyway. Because a lot of the things I outline in the book are to do with time management and saving yourself time and streamlining things. And I use these kind of hacks with other clients to help them save time. So it's like, just write down everything you know. And within that remaining 45 minutes, not only had I written the chapter structure, but I'd written the first chapter as well. And I realized, like, actually, this does not take a long time at all. So I wrote the whole book in 3 days. It was done in 3 days.
Well done.
But then I didn't pull my finger out my arse for 18 months because I was scared of putting myself out there to actually release it. So
that's not uncommon.
I know, it's horrible. It's such a... At first I was going to do it in a pen name. I wouldn't have had a problem doing it in a pen name. Just get it out there. It wouldn't have mattered. But because it's my own name on the tin, it's so... And it's funny, like, my mum ordered a copy of the book the other day, and I went round, she took my little kid to a panto, so I went to pick him up, and she's like, oh, my book's come. And it was really weird, because it was like, oh, you've bought it. And she looked at me, she was like, of course I'm going to buy your book. But it was such a strange concept. My mum stood there holding a copy of my book, so I took a little picture of her. And So in order to kind of like, it's only been out less than a week, and I've got some amazing reviews because I sent it out to about 100 people actually 2 months ago for them to read. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely nerve wracking because I wrote it such a long time ago. And now we've come, and even though I wrote it in 3 days, I have edited it many, many times.
Yeah.
To a point where it becomes unrecognizable. You know, when you go back to a piece of copy and you've edited it so many times and you're like, oh, I don't even know why I started this.
Can't see it sometimes after that.
Yeah. And it's funny because even now I read back the pages and go, did I write that? That's quite good. But the feedback from that initial reader group has been very shocking because it's been so positive and it wasn't something I expected at all. And so, yeah, there have been a few tears of joy over the past week reading people's responses. And a lot of them I can't share because they're very personal. Mm. But people are generally saying, like, oh, this is just quite honest and refreshing because I don't have it all together. I don't. But even if you adopt some of these things, oh, they make such a difference. They really do.
There's two things that come to me on that one. One of them is your resistance to writing the book. And I think most people's challenge to do anything is the resistance to start.
Yes.
It's because
make it perfect.
No, but not that. It's that we create the journey bigger. We create the obstacle that is actually bigger than sitting down. I must have heard it 30 years ago. So an author talking, the hardest thing about writing is getting your ass in the chair.
Yes. It is. And you think, it's not just writing, any task in life, quite often, we think it's going to take longer than it actually does.
My wife is terrible for this sort of thing. I need to do the cleaning. I need to get some housework done. And she'll sit on the chair and moan about doing the housework. For an hour plus.
Yeah.
And then get up and do something in 20 minutes. Go, oh, that was
good. Well, I actually did an exercise where I timed how long things take. So making the bed was something ridiculous, like 27 seconds. Mm-hmm. And running off around the bathroom, 2 minutes 30. And when you start timing things, my coffee takes 1 minute 37 to pour. As soon as you hit that switch, it takes 1 minute 37. So I started doing like some squats while my coffee was pouring. And there's a great book, Jeff Olson's Slight Edge. It talks about, you know, the cumulative effect of your actions. And if you can break things down and know how long things take, not only can you have no excuse of getting them done, but you can plan your days better. So I tend to work in Pomodoro time. I don't know if you've come across this before. Okay. So 25 minute on a task, 5 minute break. And timing things. So timing how long it took me to write an article, timing how long it took me to schedule social media for a week. It helps me plan my week in advance to make sure I've got enough time.
Yeah.
Because I am a yes person. I will say yes. But being realistic and knowing how long things take and looking at my week ahead and the gaps that I've got has really helped me to be able to say no to people.
Yeah.
And to make sure I've got that time for my family and not be so busy that I forget to live. And that's, overcoming overwhelm by being realistic in my approach has been huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah, it's amazing how sometimes some things are really actually quite easy to do when we actually do them.
And
it's the journey in our head that's different.
It's like I put the washing on just before we chatted, you know, and I looked at my clock and it said 10:57 and I knew we were talking at 11. And the washing was in the machine by 10:58 and I would have left that, whereas it's finished now and it's ready to go in the dryer.
Yeah.
And yeah. Get it done. Do it. It's done. Great phrase. I say it often. Do it. It's done. No. Like it takes less than a minute to put the bin out. So why am I looking at that pile right there in front of me of the recycling that's not been taken out?
So to wind us up and to come to a conclusion, because we've been talking a while and I love to talk to people and I could go on. I mean, I think you and I are quite matched here. So we could probably trade stories for quite a while. So tell me, how do people get hold of the book? Is it on Amazon still?
It is on Amazon.
It's on Kindle, isn't it, at the moment?
It is. It's only 99p. Whoop, whoop.
How long will that stay, 99p?
I don't know. Ben's the boss of all that technical stuff. And he just gets cross with me because he tells me these things 100 times and then I'm like, yeah, whatever. So
with my marketing hat on, you probably want to put a deadline on the 99p, then you can encourage people to get there before the deadline expires.
Okay. Are you doing this today?
This will go back today, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, I think it's still till Thursday morning. Yeah, it is actually. It's 99p till Thursday.
There is. Okay, so we need to get this out there and make sure it happens. Okay, so 99p, you can get the book for 99p, so do it now. And other than that, there is a physical copy. Is there a website associated with the book?
Yes, mindandbodyworld.com.
Okay, you can send me the link on that one. It will be on the website. Anything else we need to know about you? That people to find you, contact you, talk to you? What do you want? What would you want people to do?
If people want to get hold of me, my own personal website is gemmaray.co.uk. Mm-hmm. And in addition to writing books, my ninja skill is award entry writing. So yeah, if anybody's looking to promote their business by winning awards, as long as you're award winning worthy, that's a mouthful. Yes, that's my ninja skill.
Fantastic. Well, we'll sort that bit out then. So the final question I come to my guests, this is the big one. So we are born into this earth and we are animals. That's what we are. Just like the cat, the dog, and all the bits and pieces. But we are the only animals that thinks we are the boss and thinks there is more to life than everyone else does. So tell me, from your perspective, what is the meaning of life? Why are we here?
I don't know why we're here. That's the first thing. I haven't got a clue. Mm-hmm. But the meaning of life for me is definitely to live true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think in order to do that, you really have to not only get to know yourself, mm-hmm. but really genuinely like yourself as well. That's a big trick for a lot of people. But being able to get to a point where you really, I don't use the word, some people say that, you've got to love yourself. Sometimes I think that sounds a bit, yeah. But yeah, you've got to be able to like yourself, like what you stand for, like what you do, like the people, love the people that you associate with, because ultimately only you chooses how you feel. Mm.
That's very apt, actually. There was I did my coach training with a guy called Duncan Coppock, and he wrote a book called The Self Factor. And the overriding factor in that book is that there's only one relationship in your life that's totally consistent, and that's the relationship you have with yourself.
Definitely.
It's the only relationship you can rely on, because it's the one you're born with and the one you die with.
Yeah, I like that. What's that book called again?
The Self Factor.
The Self Factor. That's getting downloaded.
So Gemma Ray, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been great to be able to catch up with you in your caravan.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to put the heating on now. I didn't put it on while we were talking because it's very noisy, but my feet are frozen.
I did put my heater on because I live in a big house, but I don't heat in the daytime because there's no point.
Oh, we're such grown-ups.
We
listen
are.
To us talk about heating. I don't want to be an adult anymore.
Thank you so much. I shall talk
Thank
to you,
you
again, I'm sure. Bye-bye. That was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Gemma Ray. If you want to get that book, go to Amazon now while that Kindle offer is still open. Just 99p for my UK listeners. All of the other connections to Gemma will be available at the website Life, Passion and Business under the podcast player on the relevant page. So thank you for taking the time to listen to these shows. I really appreciate your time and attention. And remember, you can support us with a review in your podcast app or on iTunes. So thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you later.